From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You have that eccentric, crazy uncle that shows up at reunions or Thanksgiving dinners, and there's Bill Shatner, our crazy, eccentric uncle.
Star Trek's Mr. Sulu, George Takei, recalls behind-the-scenes madness on the original Star Trek movie. And he explains why a very reluctant William Shatner nonetheless appears in the new documentary, To Be Takei. But first on the Hollywood News Banter, a surprise choice to run DreamWorks, and Netflix pays big bucks for a Fox TV show that hasn't even premiered on that network yet. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my buddy in banter, Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kim.
So, a surprise choice to run DreamWorks, the studio that Steven Spielberg founded some years ago with partners who are no longer there, David Geffen and Jeffrey Katzenberg. Now it seems to be kind of the Steven Spielberg show. Stacy Snyder, we reported long ago, is due to go to Fox, to a big job at Fox. And there was a, you know, speculation this kind of executive about town might get the DreamWorks job, that one might. And then Michael Wright from Turner, from a guy who oversees TBS and TNT and these Turner networks, turns out to be the guy.
Yeah, well, so Michael Wright and Steven Spielberg actually got to know each other very well on the show Falling Skies, which is a big hit for Turner and actually is about to go away after this season. They would clash at times over the direction of the show. Should it go more sci-fi? Should it go more sort of plot-driven or character-driven? But I think out of that came a mutual respect and a like and an enjoyment of each other's company. And so out of that came this new relationship, and now Michael Wright is CEO of DreamWorks Studios.
So this is the TV guy going into the movie world, which is usually a recipe for fairly instant death. You know, Rich Ross at Disney did not work out. Gail Berman at Paramount did not.
Film is a
tribal community. They turn on the TV guys.
Yeah, you go back to Brandon Tartikoff, even when he went from being the hero of television at NBC over to Paramount and only lasted there about a year. So it's a tough transition, but I think this is a little different, obviously. This is a smaller scale studio. And again, there is that relationship between Steven and Michael.
Right. He will be under the wing of Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. And Spielberg will make sure that he, is set out to win.
Well, and he's speaking in a very humble tone about how he knows he has a lot to learn. He's not going to be a guy who tries to come in and acts like he knows it all, which is wise, very wise. DreamWorks has been sort of challenged. They get funded by this Indian giant company, Reliance. But the question is, how much funding do they get? And the answer seems to be not that much. And they've really had a trickle of films. They've had a rather shaky track record at the box office. Need for Speed, not doing so well. 100-Foot Journey, not so well. But nonetheless, it's still a thing.
Yeah, and the surprising thing here, or maybe not so surprising, is that Michael won't be doing any television over at DreamWorks because, as you know, Kim, Amblin Television, which used to be DreamWorks Television, now operates sort of on a separate track. Spielberg is still involved, but Reliance does not fund the TV side. So Daryl Frank and Justin Falvey, who run Amblin Television, are on a roll. That portion of Spielberg's business is doing quite well right now.
So Under the Dome, Extant.
They've got a new show called Red Band Society coming to Fox in the fall. They've got The Americans on FX. The list goes on and on. They've got a number of shows going. So they're doing quite well. But Michael will be busy on the film side.
And meanwhile, this could free up Stacy Snyder, who's we long ago broke the story that she was going to go to a very high-level job at Fox at the movie studio there. Stacy, one of the top executives and top women executives. But coming off of a kind of a rough run, meanwhile, Fox has been on fire this summer with the movies like Fault in Our Stars and the latest X-Men movie, which was huge. So it's kind of funny. She's coming off of a weak track record at DreamWorks going to a very strong Fox studio, but we're going to find out more very soon about what her job is going to be and how that's going to work.
Yeah, and speaking of musical chairs, with Michael Wright departing Turner, there's a big vacuum now because Steve Coonan, who headed up all of Turner Entertainment, left a while ago. And now with Michael Wright, who headed up channels like TNT, TBS, TCM leaving as well, there's really no one in charge of entertainment. There are a lot of rumored names who are coming in. We should find out in the coming days or weeks, but that's a
who
big
gets
job
that
as well.
Job. Yeah, big TV job with some big names being circulated in contention. Meanwhile, you know, it is tough for a cable outfit like these Turner networks that you just mentioned, because the competition is intense, the clutter is considerable, it's hard to break through, and you have competitors like Netflix who are playing, Netflix is playing a very interesting game with original programming, and now they're starting to pick up stuff from the networks, from the big broadcast networks.
Yeah, they're snapping up some big properties. So a couple weeks ago, they picked up the reruns of The Blacklist, one of the few hits out of last year, that show from NBC starring James Spader, for $2 million an episode. And now in another big blockbuster deal, they're paying Warner Brothers $1.75 million per episode for repeats of Gotham, brand new show that hasn't even launched yet on Fox.
Yeah, we're seeing Netflix and things like Amazon coming into the game. They picked up part of Under the Dome to make that a reality on CBS, and they're picking up shows from CBS that haven't even aired yet.
Yeah, and what's interesting here is there aren't many actual, you know, broadcast shows that do well in syndication, and few that are actually coming up available for syndication in the coming years. And if Netflix and Amazon pick up all those shows, cable networks like USA and Turner won't have those shows at their disposal. So those companies are even moving further into original content, as well as back into picking up movies again. So while you'll see less repeats of broadcast shows on cable, Netflix and Amazon, they know that a majority of people who are subscribing to their services still want to see old TV shows, not just the originals they're doing. And so this is just stocking up. And the broadcast networks just aren't cultivating many new hits these days. So the cupboard is bare when it comes time to sell those shows into syndication. So the few shows that are available, like The Blacklist, suddenly become more valuable.
Yeah, bringing some money to the broadcast networks and plenty for us to binge. Thank you, Michael.
Absolutely.
That's Michael Schneider, executive editor of TV Guide magazine. George Takei is best known as Star Trek's Lieutenant Sulu, often the voice of impending peril aboard the USS Enterprise.
Trouble aboard the Klingon ship. Evidence of explosions. Massive destruction.
But there's more to Takei's life and career than exploring space, the final frontier, as is revealed in filmmaker Jennifer Kroot's new documentary, To Be Takei. Of course, the film deals with the actor's decades aboard the Enterprise, but it also examines the lasting impact of Takei's childhood experience when he and his family were sent to an internment camp during World War II. The 77-year-old Takei is also an outspoken activist for gay rights and marriage equality. He came out in 2005 and 3 years later married his longtime partner, Brad Altman. To Be Takei offers a revealing look at their relationship.
George is the love of my life. I'm proud of him.
I've heard that before.
He's wonderful.
Well, if you see him talking to me sometimes, you wouldn't think so.
I didn't understand that answer.
As George Takei told me, at first neither he nor his husband were open to the idea of doing the film.
As a matter of fact, Jennifer Kroot, the documentarian, came to us with the idea of doing a documentary. Now, many actors have documentaries made which actually are vanity projects. And so we were very skittish at first. We didn't know the documentarian, Jennifer Kroot, from Eve, as the case may be. So we had many, many meetings with her, and we got to realize that she's kindred. We share common values, common issues that we're concerned about. And so because we didn't want a vanity project, we gave her carte blanche. We said, we're not going to insist on final cut approval. Now that the film is made, I kind of wish we did, because there are some insignificant things that we just as soon she had not included. But this is really her work, and I think she did a wonderful job.
Well, give me an example of one of these insignificant things, because, you know, you both come across as a lovely couple, you and Brad, your husband, and you seem a lot more comfortable with the idea in many cases than he does, but he's very game and he does his best. Am I reading this right?
You are absolutely right. I am comfortable in front of the camera, and Brad never has been, and I don't think he still is. Jennifer captured some of that.
Right.
But because I'm so comfortable with the camera, for example, when I was on my way to rehearsals for Allegiance, the musical we developed on the internment of Japanese Americans.
Right.
She suggested I start singing one of the numbers. And, you know, here I am laden down with rehearsal tools, the script, and I'm huffing and puffing down the street, and I start singing that, and I'm out of breath. And so, of course, you know, I'm not singing at my best. And then she cut in a scene where she asked Brad about my singing, and he says, well, George has a loud voice, but sometimes he doesn't quite hit the notes. And so that juxtaposition made it seem
Ouch.
Like I don't know how to sing. And actually, I do sing in the musical.
So it was not a vanity project, but your vanity got a little wounded in the process, huh?
It is certainly and most definitely not a vanity project.
So how did Jennifer pitch this to you? What did she say?
Well, she told us that she'd been a Star Trek fan from way back.
And I'm really got to stop you there and say, did that scare you or encourage you? Because I know you've got some
very... Oh, I love Star Trek fans.
All of them.
Well, you know, there's a whole vast...
Yes, galaxy.
galaxy of fans, and they're infinite diversity, as we say on Star Trek.
Right.
Infinite diversity and infinite combinations. But the fact that she... was a Star Trek fan, I think was one notch in her favor, because people who understand Star Trek are a very special group. They see the metaphors that Gene Roddenberry used to comment on social, political, environmental issues of the time. Then she said, when I came out in 2005 and became active in the movement for equality for the LGBT community. She was impressed by that. And so she read my autobiography. And for the first time, she learned that I had spent my childhood in two barbed wire U.S. internment camps.
Right.
Simply because we have happened to look like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Right.
You know, we're American citizens, innocent American
right.
citizens. And when she read about that in my autobiography, she really became interested in my life and decided she wanted to do a documentary on us.
That is very poignantly portrayed in the film, that part of your life, I think.
Yes, she did a wonderful job.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. One baffling aspect of To Be Takei, a new documentary about Star Trek veteran George Takei, is the very awkward presence of William Shatner, otherwise known as Captain Kirk. Shatner agreed to do an interview with filmmaker Jennifer Crute, but he wasn't exactly gracious about it.
I don't have a relationship with George Takei. I haven't seen him in many years. I knew him briefly and very casually about 50 years ago.
What was the deal with that?
Well, first of all, his not knowing me is
not very too credible.
Eccentric.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we did 3 years of a TV series together. We did 6 major feature films together. We still do Star Trek conventions together all over the world. And he claims not to know me. And he's very eccentric. And the way we see him is, you know, we call the Star Trek cast members of our family. We're
right.
a Star Trek family. And as many families have, you have that eccentric, crazy uncle that shows up at reunions or Thanksgiving dinners. And there's Bill Shatner, our crazy, eccentric uncle.
But why did he sit for the documentary? Do you know?
I do, as a matter of fact. It was a trade-off. Jennifer wanted to interview him, and apparently he had initially demurred. But Bill came...
Respectfully.
I'm trying to be as polite
right,
as possible.
Right, you're being very... Yes. Carry on.
Well, Bill was going on a one-man performance show performing at various universities. And he wanted a clip from the Comedy Central roast in which I appeared.
Aha. Uh-huh.
He wanted something from me after he had demurred on our request. So we told Jennifer, I think we have some bargaining points here. Shall we attempt it? And when we presented him with that trade-off, he agreed. And so that's how he's there. So we do have the entire surviving members of the Star Trek cast in To Be Decay.
So going back in time, I wrote quite a lot about the first Star Trek movie. And that, I mean, if Bill Shatner was the crazy uncle, there was a lot of dysfunction in the Star Trek family. You know, originally they didn't include Spock, and Leonard Nimoy had big issues with Paramount. I think he was in litigation. But there were also problems with Gene Roddenberry, and they brought in Harold Livingston to write the script, and the two of them were at war with each other. And I read, I think I even wrote myself, that Livingston would write his version of the script, and then Gene Roddenberry at one point was intercepting the pages and substituting his own, and that you guys in the cast didn't know what was what with that at the beginning of the movie, this is.
We did not, and we kept getting rewrites after rewrites. And the first film we had the most difficulties with. We were in trouble from the beginning, and it went way over budget and way over schedule. And that's when Paramount said that there's going to be no more Star Trek film made. This is it. And we were all...
And the buzz was bad, right? It was a terrible buzz.
Yes. But when it opened, bless their hearts, the Trekkies all lined up in front of the box office, and they made it a profitable film. And so the green, ugly head of greed came up at the front office, and they decided, after all, they will do another one. But that's when Leonard... came into play. He said this is going to be the only one, The Wrath of Khan. He will not do Spock anymore.
No more Spock.
Because it was affecting his career. And so he made them agree and had it written into his contract that his character would be killed off at the end of this film, Wrath of Khan. And he was indeed killed off. But Nick Meyer,
miraculously,
the writer, managed to slip in one little bit before he gets killed off. He touches Dr. McCoy and shares a very cryptic line, "Remember, remember." And then he goes into that nuclear radiation chamber.
Right.
And it turns out that that was the key. And because
really?
The Wrath of Khan became a box office bonanza for Paramount, they wanted to do another Star Trek film. But he'd been killed off.
Sort of, yeah.
So you know the whole saga.
Resurrection.
Resurrection.
So they brought him back. It's the Hollywood way.
He came back. Well, he was enticed with a very handsome remuneration.
I am sure.
And that's when we discovered that Bill had written into his contract that if any other actor should be remunerated more than him, his will go up to equal that.
Right. Most favored nation treatment.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm sure he got it.
He did indeed.
Did the rest of the cast just then start finding out about this and saying, well, if they're getting this, then we should have that?
We did. And unsuccessfully.
Oh, really? Well, those were tough guys in those
they
days.
They were.
Barry Diller and Michael Eisner
indeed.
And Jeffrey Katzenberg. Tough customers, right?
Yes, yes. They were tough guys, yes.
Coming up after a short break, George Takei tells us how he manages his massive social media presence, which includes more than 1 million followers on Twitter. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with George Takei, the actor and activist who's the subject of the new documentary, To Be Takei. Takei is best known for his role on the Star Trek television series, which didn't last that long. But after a pause of several years, Takei found himself once again manning the controls of the USS Enterprise, this time on the big screen.
Maneuvering thrusters, Mr. Sulu.
Maneuvering thrusters, sir.
Hold station.
Thrusters at station keeping, sir.
Though the production of Star Trek, the motion picture, was a near disaster, behind schedule, over budget, beset by bickering, Takei, nonetheless, has fond memories of the experience.
We were absolutely thrilled 10 years after we were canceled. I mean, it's never happened before, you know. A very unsuccessful TV series, which announced at the beginning of each episode that we were on a 5-year mission, to have been aborted in the third year.
Oops.
And then to be resurrected a decade later as a major feature film directed by a legendary director, Robert Wise,
yeah.
With a multi-million dollar budget that grew and grew and grew. But, you know, it was a thrill. And yes, we had all those difficulties, but we thought, you know, all great movies have challenges when they're getting made. And so we are being consistent with all the great movies. And sure enough, when it was released, the box office was enormous. We had no idea that it would go on. And here we are in the year 2014, only 2 years before we become 50 years old. Doesn't that sound wonderful? We become 50 years old from my vantage point.
So young.
But it's the golden anniversary
You're
of
right.
Star Trek.
That's
is
amazing.
In 2016. I mean, it's a real phenomenon.
At the time, of course, that, you know, Star Wars had come out and Close Encounters. So Paramount was chasing some, you know, very big, successful movies in that space. And Star Trek just must have exceeded their wildest dreams, especially since they thought it was going to be such a dog when they were even about to release the movie.
Well, as a matter of fact, we owe our resurrection to Star Wars. Because it was the enormous explosion at the box office that Star Wars caused that got the powers that be at Paramount to start thinking. You know, they were going to revive Star Trek first.
As a TV movie, right?
Yeah. As a TV series. And then what we heard was that it's going to be they had these movies of the months
right.
back then. And it was going to be one of that. And we thought, oh, that'd be wonderful. You know, that disappeared. And then Star Wars exploded at the box office, and that's what got Paramount to decide it's going to be a feature film.
Now, let me just turn away from the Star Trek for a bit and to ask you about your social media presence. You are very popular on Facebook and very funny on Facebook often. You're busy. How do you do it? How do you manage this?
I have a team. We call it Team Takei. Interns, and my husband Brad is the leader of that team, and I'm not, you know, able to deal with it all the time. So what we do is we backlog the memes, and the interns are given a schedule of when to post them. So I do the witty commentaries, and Brad is the manager of it.
And you just keep it going. And so what is important to you now? I mean, I see you on Howard Stern, and I see you here and there, and I see you, I was particularly struck by the Celebrity Apprentice. I've always wanted to ask someone, why do that? It's like, you're a liberal guy. Donald Trump is not a liberal guy. I mean, I would think he would be offensive to you in many of his beliefs. Is it a paycheck, or is it exposure, or both, or what is it?
With Donald Trump, this was another opportunity to discuss LGBT equality. And that show gave us access to a different kind of audience. You know, I went on college speaking tours or speaking to corporations or to governmental agencies on LGBT issues. But at those events, the audience is made up largely of LGBT people or our allies, straight
right.
people who support us. And to really broaden that support. We need to get to that, what I maintain is the decent, fair-minded, vast middle. And Howard would give us access to that. So that's why I do shows like The Howard Stern Show or The Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump. We are of different a political orientation, but I think it's that kind of sharing of differences in a civil way that makes our democracy work. When it gets to be extreme, as is now, then it ceases to be a good conversation.
What is the status of Allegiance, the musical you did about your internment?
I saw
it.
Yes.
You played it in San Diego, I think, right?
We broke the 77-year box office and attendance record at the Old Globe Theater. So it was an enormous triumph there in San Diego. And we thought the transition to Broadway would be a piece of cake. But we discovered that something unique is happening on Broadway. Every theater is fully occupied, and we have to get in line with other producers. We've been in line for a year and a half. And the other thing that we have discovered is that there's this thing called the Broadway Old Boy Network. Mm. These grizzled old producers who have brought many, many box office successes to a particular theater. And they know the theater company that owns the theater very
right.
well. So they can come in from left field without having to get in line. And the next vacancy that happens, they've snapped it up. And so we're getting very impatient, but we also recognize the realities. And we are now in conversation with other grizzled old Broadway producers and
to get them on your team.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let me just ask you one last question. So this documentary was available on DirecTV and then it came out in theaters. Do you feel any impact about this particular pattern of release? It's, you know, it's a thing that people are playing around with now, making things available in a particular place before it goes theatrically. Is there, you have any feeling about it or any sense of how it works?
Well, there is a trial and error quality to it. We were on DirecTV through July and early August. And the Starz distributors are very, very pleased with how To Be Takei performed in DirecTV, because documentaries do generally half of the kind of business that we did. We doubled their norm. And I think the word of mouth from the DirecTV exposure has been powerful. And I think it's going to help us with the theatrical release as well as videos on demand. So we're eagerly looking forward to seeing whether that works or not, that pattern of release. The Starz distributors are experimenting with this new process, and we'll see how well it works.
It's an experimental time. It's the frontiers that have not yet been, what is it, the far, I can't remember the catchphrase.
Boldly go when no one has gone before.
Exactly, that's what they're doing.
And we intend to live long and prosper.
George Takei is an actor, writer, director, activist, and maybe the funniest man on Facebook. The documentary To Be Takei is now out in theaters and available via video on demand. Thank you so much for joining us.
I've enjoyed the conversation.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Melissa Morton. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.